tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Well, today we're continuing our series entitled Defying Gravity, and we're talking about how to actually change our lives. Life change is not easy, and it's something that we have to wrestle with. If life change was easy, everyone would do it. What is easy is staying the same. What is easy is ignoring the things in our life that we don't really like and just pretending that they're not there. That's easy. But to actually tackle something that is weighing you down and actually overcome it, that is incredibly difficult. It is hard to defy gravity. Last week, if you were here, I encourage you to make a priority to be here every week in this series because we're trying to build on each week. If you did miss a week, make sure you check out our podcast. Last week, we talked about that the issue and the reason why we're pulled down by gravity is it's not someone else's fault. It's something with inside of us, that all of us have our own junk, our own temptation, our own wretchedness that pulls us down. And our text last week showed us that it is when we get our eyes off of ourselves and put our eyes on Jesus that he allows us to defy gravity. Well, today we're going to continue along with part two, and in order to defy gravity, we have to understand the laws of gravity. Sir Isaac Newton came up with the three laws of gravity, and the third law of gravity states that for every action or force in nature, there's an equal and opposite reaction. In nature, whenever there is a force, there is an equal or opposite reaction. That's the way that gravity works. And life change plays by the exact same rules as gravity. When you decide in your life to change something, there is always an equal or opposite force that comes against you. This is why life change is not easy. If it was easy, we wouldn't feel this force. We would just decide, I'm going to change, and then we would change. But anytime in your life, whenever you decide, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, I'm going to make this change. Anytime you make that decision, the laws of gravity come into play. And you think that you're going to soar, but then gravity tends to pull you back down. And I want to show you that Jesus has talked about and given us, it's a really weird, but it is a powerful way for us to defy gravity. The text that we're going to talk about today, I want to give a little bit of disclaimer because this isn't one of the most popular texts out there. This isn't one of the texts that you'll see people get tattooed on their bodies. This isn't one of the texts that is like on frames in people's houses. This is not one of the most popular texts out there. It is a little weird and a little strange, but I think the point of it is life-changing. And I would argue that if you and I could put into practice what Jesus is going to teach us today, we would literally defy gravity. I want to show you this. We're going to read our text, and at Next Level Church, we stand to show honor to the text. So I want to invite you to stand and to read with me. This is the main portion of our text. It's Matthew 12, 43 through 44. Would you read it nice and loud with me? It says, when an impure spirit comes out of a person, it goes through arid places seeking rest and does not find it. Then it says, I will return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house unoccupied, swept clean, and put in order. Now that we've read the text, would you go to God in prayer? God, we just come before you right now, and we just admit that our discipline's not enough to change our lives. And so, God, we just ask that you would speak to our hearts. God, some of us are distracted coming in here. We got major issues. We got life stuff. We have football teams to cheer for. We got all sorts of stuff on our brain. And so we just ask that right now you would just quiet our hearts and that you'd speak to our souls. God, would you give us the courage to obey no matter how hard it is? And God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. So the text that we're going to wrestle with today, it talks a little bit about the devil and a little bit about demons. Now, I don't know what your thought is about the devil and demons. I don't know what your background is. I just want to acknowledge right off the bat, it's a little weird. It's a little bit out there. And for some of you, if you grew up in church, then the devil and demons, it's just been a part of your childhood. Like every time something scary happened, that's the devil. The devil made me do it. It's the devil. The devil's always there. And so you're like, you don't even think twice about it. But others of us, we're very skeptical. And when someone starts talking about the devil, your brain goes the science route, and you're just like, I don't really know if there's a spiritual world. And I just want to address that real quick. If that's you, if you're incredibly skeptical, I think Jesus's main idea is still applicable to you, even if you do not believe there is a spiritual world out there. Others of you, though, your whole world and your whole understanding of the spiritual world comes from the movies that you've watched. And so when you hear the devil or demons, you get a little scared. And you picture like a little girl being possessed by a demon and her head spinning around and puking green puke, or people being dragged across the floor and they don't want to. And you hear demon, you're like, oh, I'm out. I'm gone. This is scary. And I get that. I want to address that real quick, though, because I don't think that the devil or the spiritual world or the demons, I don't think it's nearly as scary as what our culture wants us to think. In fact, there's a time in Jesus' life when he went out into the wilderness and he literally had a temptation from Satan. I've never met Satan. I've never seen Satan. If I did, I probably would be scared. But Jesus had a confrontation with him. And you would think if the devil was like what we think he is and what we picture him in the movies, you would think that Jesus versus the devil would be this epic showdown in the desert. It would be this classic boxing match. It would be like two Jedis going at it, like hitting each other with the force, and mountains would be crumbling, and it would be this amazing epic battle. And if you ever read the temptation of Jesus, it's not very epic. You want to know how the devil tempts Jesus? It's simply with a conversation. If the devil was as scary as our culture wants us to believe, none of us would fall to his temptation. Because when I get scared, I run away. I don't hang out with things that scare me. But the devil doesn't come in a scary form. He doesn't come in this pure evil form. It's not like he's coming to just get us to be this like crazy thing where we're going to be dragged across the floor by the devil. That's not how the devil works. How the devil works is with a simple conversation. And in Jesus' life, the devil tempted him when he was at his weakest. He was fasting for 40 days and for 40 nights. And that's when the devil came in the conversation. And I'm convinced that the spiritual enemies out there, that's when they attack us. The devil does not mess around with you when you are disciplined, when you are on your A game, when you're hitting it out of the park. He could care less. All he has to do is wait until you get tired. He has to wait until you get stressed. He has to wait until you say, I just can't even. At that point, the devil comes. And what does he do? He just has a simple conversation. You want to know what the devil tempted Jesus with? It was with food, self-doubt, and power. I find it interesting that the devil hasn't become very creative, because the same things he tempted Jesus with is the same stuff he tempts us with today. It is food or substances. It is self-doubt. You can't change. You don't belong in a church. What are you doing here? You have no business facilitating a group. You can't do that. Remember the sin that you did? Self-doubt. Or power. So often, the devil comes and he says, hey, if you want something in life, you have to be powerful. In order to be powerful, you have to knock down people and take out people. And power becomes something we become addicted to. And here's how God works. God gives us something good, and the enemy comes along and takes what is good and turns it into an addiction. Food is God's gift to us. Food is good. In the hands of the devil, it becomes a temptation. Sex is good. That was God's gift to us. In the hands of the devil, it becomes a temptation. Authority is good. Having authority and having lines of authority and knowing, hey, this person's in charge, they're bearing the weight of leadership, that's a good thing. In the hands of the devil, it becomes a temptation. And the things in life that we struggle with, it's not these big, evil, demonic things. It is the little conversations that we have with inside our own hearts and minds. And it's the little things that keep tripping all of us up. So Jesus, when he was on the scene, there were some religious leaders who, they're called the Pharisees, and they were incredibly envious of Jesus' attention. Jesus comes on the scene and starts teaching, and crowds start flocking around him, and he starts gathering a bunch of people. And when the Pharisees see this, they see that people aren't listening to them very much anymore, and so they throw out this little idea. They start whispering to the crowd, and on one day, Jesus heals a guy. And he heals him like a literal miracle. And this is where our text is going to pick up. If you read it with me, Matthew 12:24 says, but when the Pharisees heard this, they said, it is only by Beelzebub, the prince of demons, that this fellow drives out demons. Now, back in Jesus' day, the word that they often reference for Satan or the devil was Beelzebub. So if you ever see that throughout our text, you can just translate that in your mind, the devil. The Pharisees heard what Jesus was doing, and they start whispering to the crowd, hey, that Jesus guy, he's possessed by the devil. Now, this next part, it's just going to be really short, but I just want to speak to the church people. For those of you that are like really religious, maybe you grew up in church, maybe you have just kind of a churchy background, I just want to talk to you. Everyone else, you're off the hook for a few seconds. But if you are just a really like kind of churchy person, there is a temptation for churchy people that when we don't get what we want, when we don't like something, we start hurling accusations at other people and we go spiritual. Instead of just saying, hey, I'm jealous of your popularity, I'm envious of what's going on, we throw out insults like, you're possessed by the devil. And that is one of like the most ridiculous insults, because you can't argue that. That is like the my stomach hurts of all insults. Like, if you have kids and your kids at some point have faked being sick for something, school, church, something, and you go to give them a thermometer, and if they don't have a temperature, you say, nope, you're going to school, you're going to church, you're not sick. If your kid is smart, your kid will say, my tummy hurts. Because you can't disprove my tummy hurts. My daughter did this to us. She was telling the story the other day. We have a rule in my household that the kids do not sleep in our bed. The bed is for mom and dad. We spent too much money on their beds. They need to enjoy them and sleep in their own beds. And my kids know this. We've made an exception, though, that when one of us is out of town, we give a reward for those kids. And so if my wife's out of town for 3 nights, one night my son shares the bed, the next night my daughter, and then the third night I get it all back to myself. Well, my daughter figured this out, and she figured that if she would come into the room and say that she had a stomach ache, then I would be too tired to deal with it, and she could just end in the bed every single night. And she's telling this story the other day, and this is literally what she would do. I would fall asleep, and about 2:30 in the morning, I would just feel like someone was watching me. Have you ever had that feeling? And I would wake up and kind of look around like someone's looking, and my daughter would be standing right by my bed looking at me. Daddy, my tummy hurts. Well, have you gone to the bathroom? I don't have to. Okay, just get in bed. I don't care. I'm just tired. And she would get her way. You can't disprove that. And it's the same thing that religious people do often. They will, instead of dealing with their own issues or their own insecurities, they'll throw these insults. You're a heretic. You're demon-possessed. And I would just throw out there to you, if you are ever around someone who, instead of dealing with their issues, is throwing these spiritual insults at someone else, have a red flag that goes up. That's an issue going on. It is causing people to get away from the real issue, and that's what the Pharisees were doing. The Pharisees weren't willing to say, you know what, we're jealous that Jesus has a bigger crowd coming to see him, so let's just throw out there, Jesus is demon-possessed. Jesus hears what they're saying, and look at how he responds. So Jesus knew their thoughts, and he said to them, every kingdom divided against itself will be ruined, and every city or household divided against itself will not stand. If Satan drives out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then can his kingdom stand? And if I drive out demons by Beelzebub, by whom do your people drive them out? So then, they will be your judge. But if it is by the Spirit of God that I drive out demons, then the kingdom of God has come upon you. Jesus is making a point, and his point, I think, is applicable to us. Even if you're here today and you would say, I don't really believe in a whole spiritual world out there. I'm into science. I don't really think that's there. Jesus' main point and his understanding of this, it applies to every single one of us in the room. And Jesus' point is, a house divided against itself cannot stand. Jesus looks at the Pharisees and says, if I'm using Satan to cast out Satan, his kingdom's not going to stand. And the devil is incredibly unified. The one thing that the devil knows is unity. He knows if he can break people apart, if he can cause disunity, it will cause all sorts of issues. So you never see in Scripture where the devil and demons are not unified. They are always unified on their same mission. And Jesus says to them, if I am casting out a demon by a demon, then the house cannot stand. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Another way to say this would be, you can't defeat the demons you enjoy spending time with. You cannot defeat the demons you enjoy spending time with. There are some things in our lives that we want to change, and the reason it's such a struggle is because deep down inside we like the very things that we know we should stay away from. And the reason that we continually fall to gravity is because we say, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to change. I'm not going to go there. But deep down inside, we say, I kind of like it. And until we get to a place where we're sick and tired of being sick and tired, we will never overcome the demons or the temptations or whatever you want to define it as. We will never overcome them until we get sick and tired of being sick and tired. Because as long as you love spending time with it, as long as you allow it into the house, you will continually fall to it. I love the idea of having a six-pack abs, but I also love Krispy Kreme donuts. And when temptation comes, when you're at your weakest, when you're tired, when you're stressed, abs don't comfort you. Krispy Kreme does. Don't clap for that. That's bad behavior. That's not a clapping. It's not a clapping moment. A house divided against itself cannot stand. You cannot love both Duke basketball and UNC. You can't do it. A house divided against itself will not stand. You cannot root for the same team playing another team. You can't root for both teams. You cannot say to yourself, I want to love my spouse and yet still look at pornography all the time. A house divided against itself cannot stand. You cannot say to yourself, I want to lose weight, and yet I still want to eat the Oreos. You cannot say to yourself, I'm going to go to the gym, and yet I'm going to keep hitting snooze and go and sleep in every morning. A house divided against itself will not stand. And you want to know one of the most frustrating things in this world? It is when you finally make a decision to overcome a temptation, to overcome a struggle, and then you just kind of start letting that addiction creep back in. You want to know what purgatory is? Purgatory is when you've been disciplined for a long period of time. Let's say it's with a diet or whatever it is. If you've been disciplined and you've really been like great at counting calories or going to the gym, and then you get to the place where you want to be, and then you get to this world called maintenance mode. And maintenance mode is where purgatory happens, because in maintenance mode, you start to let the bad habits kind of creep slowly back in. And you're not as disciplined as you once were, because you say, oh, I've already got there. I can kind of cheat. I can kind of fudge. I can kind of have one foot in over here and one foot in over there. And what happens is when we go into maintenance mode, oftentimes we end up falling. Because maintenance mode allows that very thing that you were trying to stay away from back into the house. And when you don't fully commit to something, it leads to mediocrity and ultimately frustration. When you don't fully commit, when you say to yourself, hey, I'm going to make a change in 2018, but then you don't actually have the discipline to make the change, it leads to such frustration. When you say to yourself, we're going to set a budget because we hate being in debt, and yet you still spend the credit cards every time you get sad and want to buy some new shoes, you will be a house divided against yourself, and you will not stand. If you want to lose weight and yet you don't stick to a plan, you will become frustrated. It is purgatory. If you want to overcome an addiction and let you still allow those things that tempt you into the house, you are a house divided against yourself. And you cannot, and I cannot, defeat the demons that we enjoy spending time with. If you're here today and you're a teenager, would you please listen closely? Because here's something that no one talks about and no one will tell you. In your teenage years, the demons and the temptations and the things that you start to mess around with are the same demons and temptations that will haunt you for the rest of your life. And if you're here today and you're a teenager, would you just please just listen to this? Just at least think about it. You may disagree, but would you just chew on it just for a second? The things that everyone else is doing, the things that the popular crowd, the things that everyone is doing, the things that people will say, no, you're a teenager, you just need to experience it. Those very things are the things that haunt adults for the rest of their lives. And I, as a teenager, got introduced to what it meant to have a relationship with Jesus. And what this meant was there were some parties that I didn't get invited to. And there literally were some conversations where people said, Rob, we like you, we just can't invite you to the party because if you come, we will feel convicted by what we want to do at the party. And at the time, it felt awful. And at the time, it felt like, man, why aren't I being accepted? But as an adult, I have no regrets to following Jesus as a teenager. And if you're here today and you are a teenager, do not fall to the lie that you just got to experience this world and you just got to live your life and you just got to try some stuff and that's what everyone's doing. That is a lie from the pit of hell. You will have no regrets with following Jesus through your teenage years. But talk to an adult who will be honest with you. Talk to an adult who will talk about their temptation and their struggle, and I guarantee you it started back when they were a teenager. Because at some point in the teenage years, you deal with a difficult situation. Maybe it's your parents. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe there's some just drama in your life. And the way you respond to that negativity in that moment becomes your temptation, whether it's food, whether it's sex, whether it's a substance, whatever it is. And it haunts you for the rest of your life. And Jesus says that a house divided against itself cannot stand. One of the reasons why we don't see more traction in our lives is because we are great at compartmentalizing our life. The way that most of us deal with life is we have these little compartments. You have your work life here. You have your family life here. You have your fun extracurricular life here. And then you have your church life over here. And these different compartments don't really intersect with each other. Most of the time, our work friends don't intersect with our real friends or our family, and it's just these different sections. And what happens is we compartmentalize, and when you compartmentalize, it leads to zero traction because you're not fully committed to anything. And a relationship with Jesus, it breaks through every wall of compartmentalization. You don't follow Jesus just on Sunday. You don't follow Jesus just for an hour one week. Jesus becomes your life in your job, with your family, in your free time, and at church. And you follow Jesus through everything, and it breaks through compartmentalization. And when you are following Jesus, he leads you to a house united. Until we get to that point, though, we will constantly be battling within ourselves. Because the very things we want to defeat, if we're honest with ourselves, they're the exact same things that we love. And Jesus said, a house divided against itself can not stand. Well, Jesus then goes on to explain to the Pharisees why that their whole thought process is just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And I want to show you what he says next. And it, at first glance, it's a little bit weird, but I think there is so much life change in what Jesus says. Look at what he says in Matthew 12, 43 through 44, or 45. He says, when an impure spirit comes out of a person, it goes through arid places, seeking rest, and does not find it. Then it says, I'll return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house unoccupied, swept clean, and put in order. Then it goes and takes with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the final condition of that person is worse than the first. This is how it will be with this wicked generation. Now, Jesus uses a lot of different teaching techniques. One of the techniques that Jesus uses is called hyperbole. And hyperbole is basically an exaggeration on steroids in order to make a point. Like one time Jesus said that if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. If your hand causes you to sin, chop it off. That's hyperbole. No one's taking him literally on that. The difficulty is there's not a hyperbole font. And so when we read the scriptures, we don't know when Jesus is speaking hyperbole or when he is being literal. And so I don't know how you take this verse. I don't know if you take this verse as Jesus is being literal and says this is exactly what happens, or if you would take this as hyperbole. And it doesn't matter how you read this verse, because the point that Jesus made is so true, no matter if you think this is literal or if this is hyperbole. The point that Jesus is making is that in your life, whenever you want to change anything, the laws of gravity take place, that you have a reaction. You say, I'm going to change. And there is an opposite reaction that comes right back at you. And you say, I'm going to make a difference in my life. And you try to clean house and you try to make a difference. And you are good for a few days because your discipline is good. But then you get stressed. And then you get tired. And the issue is that until we take care of the source of the temptation, we will constantly just swap out one temptation for another. Studies have shown that those who want to quit smoking oftentimes end up being overweight because they've spent years doing this with a cigarette. And when they finally get the discipline to quit smoking, they still have this habit. And so they go to food, and all that they've done is replace smoking cigarettes with eating food. And so, yes, they no longer smoke, but now they have another issue. And in your life, it's the exact same thing. You have a temptation, you can call it a demon, you can call it whatever you want. There's something in your life that pulls you towards the ground. It pulls you towards gravity. And you say, this is it, I'm sick and tired of it, I'm going to get rid of it. And you try to be disciplined. And whenever you're focused on discipline, you think, I'm never going to go back there. I'm never going to do that. And then all of a sudden you find that because you haven't taken care of the root cause, when you get stressed, when you get worried, when you get anxious, you end up going back to the very thing, and it ends up being worse than when you first try to get over it. If you're taking notes, I'd love to give you the big idea. The big idea is simply this: to defy gravity, replace instant gratification with lifelong purpose. And I want to show you what I believe Jesus was teaching in a very practical way. And I need some help. Josh, would you take your seat and pick it up? It's connected. So would you just unconnect it and bring it up here and just come up here and just have a seat up here? All right. Actually, you don't have to have a seat. Just stand right behind it. Okay. This is Josh. Everyone say hi, Josh. Josh, this represents your soul. And whether or not we want to say there's a spiritual world out there, if you're skeptical of that, whatever you want to call it a temptation, whatever you want to call it, Jesus said that in our lives there are some demons that we have to fight against. There's some stuff that we don't like, and all of us can agree with that. There's something in my life that I don't like, and I want to fix it, and I want to change. And this is what Jesus says happens. I need another person to help me illustrate this, someone that's not going to get their feelings hurt, someone that is not easily embarrassed. Sean, you're wearing cat ears. We'll take you. Wow. All right. Have a seat. Now, this is Josh. This is Josh's soul. This is his demon, his temptation. Sorry. This is that thing in his life that he does not want to be there anymore. And at some point, we all get motivated to fight against these demons. It could be New Year's. It could be just you're sick and tired of it. There's some motivation. It just hits you. And you used to ignore it. You used to just accept it. You used to kind of be comfortable with it. But you finally say, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm done with you. And you kick him out. Now, this is what Jesus says happens. This thing goes wandering around the arid places. Jesus lived in a desert area, so it was arid. He says this thing goes wandering around, and he's just kind of hanging out. And he starts to reflect on his old home. And he says, you know what? It's kind of boring out here by myself. I'm not as comfortable as what I once was. You know what was really comfortable? That seat that I had in Josh's soul. That was really comfortable. I would love to find something great out here that just meets my need, but there's nothing. You know what? I wonder if Josh has filled the seat of his soul. Let me go check it out. But he thinks to himself, you know what? I got kicked out, and so I got to go back with some reinforcements. So would you just tap some people on the shoulder? If you get tapped, just come with him. You're his friends. Just tap some people. That's great. How many are we up to? We need 7 total. How many is that? We got 4. We need a few more. Okay. All right. Come on up. I wish you guys could hear this group talking. We're going to get that seat back. All right, so this is how it works. Josh has finally said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm done with it. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to get on a budget. I'm going to say no to those bad things. And he cleans the house and is completely clean. And for a few weeks, he feels great and says, I'm doing awesome. Look how great my discipline is. And then Josh gets stressed. And when Josh gets stressed, he says, man, I need something to relieve this stress. And that's when the temptation comes back. And when the temptation gets here, he says, ooh, look, my seat's empty. But if I come back the normal way, I'm going to get kicked out again. So let me bring with it some friends. So he has a seat right here. And then his friends, just pretend he's Santa Claus. There you go. Just pile on. Pile on. Keep going. He's got another knee. Go to the other side. He's got another knee. All right. Let's see. You just tapped out. You're talking about a hand on the shoulder. I'm not sitting on. There we go. There we go. All right. Everyone on? Okay. Now, stay comfy just for a second. Now, if you have ever tried to overcome a temptation, you can relate to this illustration. Because you are disciplined for a little while, but then you get stressed. And when the temptation comes back, you don't start back at day one with the temptation. You go back to the last day of it, and all the old habits and all the old mindsets and everything just keeps rushing and flooding back in. And you say to yourself, well, I messed up. I might as well just open up the floodgates and let it all come back. And then you get to a point where you're like, how did I get back here? Because I was disciplined for a few days, I was disciplined for a few weeks, but I'm telling you that when you are at your weakest, temptation comes back, and he brings his friends. All right, would you guys give temptations a hand? You guys can go. Stay here. Now, according to Jesus, this is how we defy gravity and we overcome this. So, Josh gets sick and tired of being sick and tired. He kicks out temptation. He kicks out the demon. He says, I'm done with it. The demon hangs out. Now, at this point, Josh has to make a decision. Am I going to rely on self-discipline alone? Because self-discipline will work for a couple weeks. It'll work for a few hours. It may work for a few months. But if Josh doesn't do the hard work of taking care of the root of the temptation, he will just replace one temptation with another. And this is where the hard work of life change comes, where you have to wrestle with, hey, why am I tempted with that in the first place? And at this point, you have to place something else in the soul. So I need one more person who hasn't been up here yet to volunteer. We'll take. Let me get another guy. We'll just keep this all guys. No offense to the females. Let's just one more guy. Just raise it. Just a guy. Come on. Jay, your wife's calling you out. Come on up. Jay was on his phone. I'm going to call him out. Were you, you version? Oh, sign up for port. Thank you, I guess. Thank you for signing up for port. Okay, so this is how this works. Jay, who just signed up for port. Jay represents a purpose. Ultimately, Jay represents a better story. And ultimately, the reason why we allow temptations to come in is because we are focused on what is going to make me feel good in this moment. And the way to overcome that is to think of something bigger. At the end of my life, where do I want to be? At the end of this year, where do I want to be? In the next 5 years, what's going to take me to where I want to be? The temptation, I know where that takes me. And as comfortable as the temptation is, that doesn't take me where I want to go. But if I don't replace in the seat of my soul with a purpose or a vision for God, the temptation will come back in full force. So this does not just represent the opposite of the temptation. If you want to lose weight, the opposite is not just eating healthy. That won't work because healthy food doesn't taste nearly as good as unhealthy food. If your temptation is you don't want to exercise and you're saying, hey, I got to exercise, you don't focus on, I'm just going to exercise, I'm going to go do P90X, I'm just going to go all in, that will not work. Eventually, you will fall to your discipline. If you want to be more budgeted with your money, you don't just say, we're never going to spend again. It won't work. What you have to do is replace the temptation with a better story. So this represents Josh's purpose. Now, Josh's purpose is, it's not just that he doesn't want to look at pornography or he doesn't want to eat unhealthy. Josh's purpose is he wants to serve God in every area of his life. So Josh's purpose is he wants to have an amazing marriage that honors God. And when he focuses on his purpose, it gets him past his temptation. But if he doesn't focus on the purpose, when the temptation comes, it finds a home back in his life. But if he focuses on his purpose, when the temptation comes back, what he hears is the classic line from the movie Forrest Gump, "Seat taken. Can't sit here. There's no room for you." And even though this temptation feels great, it feels amazing, it will give me what I want in the moment, it does not lead me to my purpose. And ultimately, it is when we focus on our purpose and a better story that we can say no to the temptation. But until we do this, you and I will continually find our home in the very things that we want to get out of our house. You got to help me thank these guys for illustrating this. You can take your chair. So to defy gravity, you don't just replace instant gratification with some other addiction or with some other discipline. To defy gravity, you have to replace instant gratification with a lifelong purpose. And how do you come up with your lifelong purpose? Well, ask yourself this question: where do I want to be in 5 years? Where do I want to be in 5 years? You can't just hope that you're going to get to where you want to be in 5 years. It has to come with a strategy. It has to come with a plan. And on those days and nights when you feel tempted, when you are at your weakest, when you are saying, "Hey, I'm just stressed. I need a quick something to fix this. I got to get out of this. I just need to go back to those old habits." Your purpose of saying, no. Jesus has called you to something so much greater than instant gratification. He's called me to something so much greater than instant gratification. And it is your purpose that pushes you through the temptation. So here's today's win. This is what you do with this. Where do you want to be in 5 years? Think about in your life. And I'm not just talking about where do you want to be with money or where do you want to be relationships. Think about the issue in your life. What are the demons in your life that you struggle with? Where do you want to be in 5 years? Do you want to still be wrestling with them or do you want to overcome them? Wherever you want to be in 5 years, that becomes your purpose that Jesus is leading you to. How do you honor God in that? How do you allow Him to become your purpose? And then answer this question: how am I going to get there? Because until we define the purpose of our lives, temptation finds a home. And we can try to kick it out, we can try to be disciplined. But if we're honest with ourselves, we know that our discipline only takes us so far. And that temptation, it'll come not when you're at your best, it comes when you're at your worst. And in that moment, what's going to cause you, what's going to lead you to kick it out? And just imagine with me just for a second. Just imagine that if we were a group of people that were so unified by following Jesus that we spurred one another on. And just imagine for a second that when I'm weak, I'm inspired because you're strong. Just imagine just for a second that when you're weak, you're inspired because I'm being strong. And just imagine for a second that together we're so focused on defying gravity and following Jesus that we literally are inspiring one another. And when someone falls and goes back to temptation, we don't judge them. We don't throw stones at them. We don't say, "Oh, you just stink at life." We pick them up and say, "No, let's keep going. You took your eye off your purpose. But I got to get back." This is your purpose that helps you overcome. It is the greater story. Where do you want to be in 5 years? And how are you going to get there? Will you pray with me? God, we just come before you right now. And we just admit that we have junk. We got our own demons that we battle with. And God, it is incredibly frustrating to be bogged down and weighed down by these very things that we want to get rid of. So God, would you help us to be more than inspired? Would you help us to fall madly, passionately in love with you? And God, when we're weak and we go back to the very things that pull us down, would you help us to be a people that inspires one another to get into your presence and to follow your purpose for our lives? We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.